Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of some articles that I have written that you might be interested in and tell you how to access them. So grab a pen and paper and get prepared to write down a website. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will find there a tab that says articles. If you will open that with your cursor, you will discover there are some articles that I've produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. I'm not a regular blogger, but when things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article. So I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. Now, back to our current study. We continue our exposition of the book of Genesis. We're in chapter 19, the famous story about Lot and his family and the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. When we closed out our last program, we were in verses 12, 13, 14. Let me reread. Then the men, by this time we know the men are angels appearing in the likeness of men. The men said to Lot, "Whom else do you have here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whomever you have in the city, bring them out of the place, out of Sodom." For they announced, "We are about to destroy this place because their outcry has become so great before the Lord that the Lord has sent us to destroy it." And Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters. And he told them, "Up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city." But he appeared to his sons-in-law to be jesting. Lot, immediately believing God, hastens to warn his sons-in-law, but to no avail. Just like those in the time of Noah mock Noah's preaching of judgment. So these sorry fellows, so full of the spirit of the world, which is to say the spirit of Sodom in this case, thought it was all a big joke. They blew off the red alert of their father-in-law. Their response to the warning of judgment to come, you will note, is so timeless and so modern. The world, as I said when our last program was winding down, the world remains history-challenged. It does not want to believe the history that is preserved for us in the Scriptures, for example. It does not want to believe extra-biblical judgments of God on other civilizations, nations, and tribes. And that's because the world does not want to labor and live under the prospect of divine accountability. Just can't handle that. In Sodom, they had managed, as so many always have down through history, to stuff down deep in their subconscious the real and present danger that God, a holy God's patience, might be exhausted. The God of Noah and the God of Abraham was nowhere near their consciousness. So, as far as they were concerned, Lot could be safely ignored. Well, in verse 15, we discover that getting Lot and his family to uproot and to get out of town was no easy task. When morning dawned, the angels, now they're called angels, urged Lot. They said, "Up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here. Get out of here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city." Verse 16, but he, Lot, hesitated. So the men seized his hand, and the hand of his wife, and the hands of his daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him. And they brought him out and put him outside the city. I want you to notice, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him, Lot. But because of the compassion of the Lord upon Lot, the angel saved his wife and his two daughters, at least his wife temporarily. We'll get to that. All that they had owned and had worked for was right there in Sodom, an urban area. Remember Jesus said, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." The angels implored Lot to get a move on. Get out of there before the deadline. But getting his family to quit dragging their feet before the whistle was more of a challenge than Lot could manage. In verse 16, the destroying angels sent by the Lord to Sodom had to step in and physically overcome Lot and his family members' hesitation. In mercy, they had to take them literally by the hands and lead them to safety. It's a timely and timeless reminder that our spirits, when they are not finely tuned to the Holy Spirit, forces God sometimes, if we may put it that way, to take us by the hand like little children and to force the issue with us by various means for our good. The Lord did it because he felt compassion for Lot. He was merciful to them. Well, the time for the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah had arrived. In verse 17, it came about when they, the angels, had brought them, Lot, his wife, and two daughters, outside, that one of the angels said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you, and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains, lest you be swept away." Verse 18, Lot said to them, "Oh, no, my lords. Now, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have magnified your loving kindness, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest disaster overtake me and I die. Now, behold, this town is near enough to flee to. It's small. Please, don't force me to go to the mountains is the idea. Let me escape there. Isn't it just a tiny place? Let me go there that my life may be saved." So the angel said to him, "Behold, I will grant you this request also, not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there." That's because of God's mercy, compassion. Therefore, the name of the town was called Zoar, which means small. Well, the clock was now about to strike 12, judgment-wise. As soon as the angels had led Lot and his two daughters and wife out of Sodom, one of the angels warned them to flee, to head for the hills, literally, to get out into the wilds, lest they should be caught up in the maelstrom of God's judgment upon Sodom and Gomorrah. Very specifically, the angel warned all of them, "Don't look back, and don't stop anywhere in the plain, lest you get swept away in the inundation of fire and brimstone." Putting our hands to the plow, we remember, and looking back, is a perennial threat to the believer. Such who do so, Jesus said, are unworthy of the kingdom of God. Well, we find Lot in verse 18 in total shock at the impending disaster. The prospect of having to hang out in the wilds, well, that was daunting to Lot. Though he recognized the mercy of God in rescuing him and his family from the inferno about to befall the city, Lot had become soft. He had become a city boy, an urbanite. And he obviously felt unequipped to cope with and survive the rugged wilderness, the hill country. So he begged to be permitted to take refuge in a no-name town of insignificant size, but out of range of the impending firestorm. He felt there he could manage to survive even without all of his city possessions. Perhaps some of you, my listeners, have been to that part of the world and you've seen the Dead Sea area where Sodom and Gomorrah, the cities of the plain, used to be. And you know, along the western edge, there is that wilderness. I don't know whether it was tree-lined in those days or not, I just don't know. But in these days, it's barren, very barren, and wild. And Lot looked at that with a sense of foreboding, and he thought, well, this may not be a big city, but this little town over here that I'd like to escape to, that's more what I'm accustomed to, even though it's not a big city. Well, in verses 21 and 22, the angel made that concession. But the angel warned Lot to move quickly before the impending hand of God struck. Lot and his family had to get in the clear, and had better do it quickly because they didn't have forever. The clock was running down. The small town, which at that time did not have the name, but I take it later acquired the name Zoar, which means exactly that, small. Lot had now gone from the big time to the small time, and that was by his own admission a mercy of God in sparing him. The Lord heard his prayer, but you've heard this statement, be careful what you ask for. When you're protesting to the Lord about certain conditions in your environment, certain situations, do be careful what you ask for. Lot was about to find that out. It appears in verse 23 that like the exodus from Egypt staged in the middle of the night, so Lot's exodus from Sodom must have been a nighttime exit. We say that, for by the time he reached that little village of Zoar, the sun was just rising. And verse 24, then without warning, like a thief in the night in the case of the wicked Sodomites, we read that the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah. And the text emphasizes that though these evil cities were burned to ashes by natural elements, that what happened was no natural disaster, but it was a disaster supernaturally generated. The text says, from the Lord out of heaven. Well, verse 25, thus God destroyed, he overthrew those cities in the entire plain, destroying all those living in those cities, and also all the vegetation in the land. It was a total devastation and wipeout. To this day, the Dead Sea area reeks of that disaster that befell those cities back in that time. It's a dead monument, you might say. Well, we see clearly in verse 26 that Lot did not marry well, unlike Abraham. Lot's wife is unnamed, but she is not forgotten. His unnamed wife ignored the warning of the destroying angels. The warning was, don't stop and don't look back. But in sadness for all she loved and lost in Sodom, she put her hand to the plow. She could not resist pining over her lost city, hesitating and yearning for the old life. And there in this narrative is the very definition and a stark portrait of double-mindedness. Here was a person headed in one direction, but still conflicted, longing for the old direction. I don't know how many people we run across in our churches who are double-minded like that. They may call themselves believers, but in the final analysis, they're not, at least if they remain that way. Evidently, in her stopping to ponder, Lot's wife got showered with salt, of which that area is full. The salt covered her so thick that she was shortly immobilized, and then she was deformed into a dead salt pillar. How fitting a judgment for one who puts his or her hand to the plow and looks back longingly, just as Israel in the wilderness constantly looked back to Egypt, and the Lord overthrew them all in the wilderness. It's double-mindedness, a heart that is not fully loyal to God. So now the escapees from Sodom are reduced to three. It's Lot and his two daughters. We read in verses 27 and 28, early the next morning, Abraham, as the scene shifts, got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord, that is, before the angel's visitation to Sodom. He looks up and he sees the divine verdict written in the sky. He saw dense smoke arising from the land, like the smoke of a furnace. All this is a type and an adumbration of God's judgment upon Babylon the Great in the end times. Verse 29, and God sparing Abraham's nephew, whom Abraham loved, from this terrible conflagration, God had remembered Abraham. The prayers of a righteous man, we're reminded in James chapter 5, accomplish much. God does listen to the petitions of his faithful servants like Abraham, in his time and his way. Meanwhile, our assignment is just to trust and obey day after day. There is no other way. Well, verse 30, in exiting Sodom to find safety from the fireball of divine judgment, Lot was certain he knew better how to tend to his own preservation than the destroying angel, who mercifully granted him a concession to go to a small town or village somewhere in the vicinity. A concession was made to him to seek refuge in that little place on the perimeter of the catastrophe. This spared Lot from having to find a way to survive in the hills of the adjacent wilderness to which he and his family had been first directed. But Lot, as a sophisticated urbanite, pleaded for the right to go to this town because he felt so ill-equipped to cope. He was being driven by fear and not faith. So in mercy, he got that concession. In the process, he got a short course in the superior wisdom of God. Little did Lot realize, as God knew all along, that when he took flight for tiny Zoar, that little town, that Lot and his daughters would become a pariah in that place. As a survivor of Sodom, they would look on Lot as someone with a curse on his head, and his life, and that of his daughters, would be at risk. Evidently, he shortly got that message, and very shortly he decided that the hills were the lesser of two dangers. So, as the angel had first advised, Lot and his daughters now hightail it out of there. They hike to the mountains, and there the city man becomes, at last, a caveman. What a transition, and what a tragedy. Where did it all start? It all started with Lot making a selfish choice when Abraham told him to go right or left, east, west, north, or south, I'll go the other way. He pitched his tent towards Sodom, and eventually he dwelt in Sodom. And though Lot got wealthy materially, in the end, he lost it all, and he basically lost his family. We'll see more about that in a moment. So from a castle in Sodom, so to speak, to a cave in the wilds. What a come down. God spared his life. Lot was considered a righteous man, of sorts. I didn't make that up. I've mentioned it many times. 2 Peter, read it. Peter calls him a righteous man who was grieved by the sins of Sodom. But still, he was not an Abraham, and he was not the man he could have been. Choices have consequences, and Lot became a poster child for that truth. I see it all the time play out in these modern times. Believers, and many of them are believers. But frankly, they make compromising choices, and those choices have consequences. Well, in verses 31 through 36, we have a sick story of pragmatic incest on the part of Lot's daughters. It is rather sick. When Lot went up from Zoar, they landed in the wilderness. With his two daughters, the firstborn said to the younger, our father's old, he's an old man now. We don't have anybody. Gosh, we need to have children. There's not a man on earth to come in to us after the manner of the earth. That is, somebody to come in and father children for us. So they hatched a plot, and they made their father drunk. They made him drink wine, and their plot was, let us lie with him, that we may preserve our family through our father. So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he didn't know. He was so drunk, so stoned, he didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. The next day, the firstborn suggested to the younger, well, last night I did my thing. Now, let's get him drunk again tonight also, and then you go in and you lie with him, and we will preserve our family through our father. So both of them were successful. Both daughters were with child by their father. And the firstborn bore a son, called his name Moab. Ah, There's one of these narratives, we call them an etiological narrative, explains the origin of the neighbor of Israel, the hostile neighbor of Israel eventually, Moab. He's the father of the Moabites to this day. And as for the younger one, she bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the sons of Ammon to this day. Driven by fear rather than faith in God, which these daughters did not have, no evidence that they ever personally possessed it like their father, they hatch up this twisted plot to get Lot drunk in order to have sex with him so that they might be able to produce offspring. This is what I call pragmatic incest. Emotionally, Lot seems pretty much trashed at this point. He's depressed, it appears from the narrative, to the point of passivity. His daughters, desperate, they're not going to have children. That was just unacceptable. They were desperate to have children, and they have no trouble helping him drown his troubles in a surfeit of wine. They must have brought that along in their backpacks, evidently. So taking advantage of Lot's stupor and his general depression, they managed to get Lot drunk, smashed out of his mind. They got him sexually aroused to the point that they were basically able, we'd have to say, to rape him, for the purpose of getting their father to impregnate them on consecutive nights. The plan succeeded, and the outcome, unfortunately, would haunt Abraham's descendants from the time of Moses down through the time of the Babylonian destruction of Judah. For both nations, the Moabites and the Ammonites, became, in time, for the most part, bitter enemies of Israel. And the Ammonites and the Moabites proved their kinship to their Sodomite mother in their time. Again, an illustration of that old saying, apples do not fall very far from the tree. Well, this brings us now to chapter 20. This chapter is a sort of deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra once said so famously, a deja vu all over again narrative in the life of Abraham. And this chapter's going to underscore several spiritual lessons for us. Let me just run through them quickly. We'll review them in our next study. This chapter will illustrate that we all have certain personal weaknesses, and because of those, we have a tendency to repeat the same blunders. And that is why, secondly, the Lord will keep challenging us at those points of personal weakness, or, to put it another way, throwing down the gauntlet until we get it. Thirdly, in this chapter 20, we will see once again, in fact, you see it all through the Scriptures, how fear is a great enemy of faith. So you and I must be careful to recognize that fact, and by God's grace, challenge those fears. Fourthly, the faith of the greatest of God's saints is like Swiss cheese, overall solid, but here and there are holes in the whole picture of faith. Fifth lesson we're going to see in this chapter is that but for the grace and mercy of God, we would all fail. And finally, integrity before God attracts His mercy. Now, mercy by its very nature is undeserved, but God by His very nature responds to integrity. What we're going to see in this chapter is weakness, not wickedness. So join us again next time, friends, for our study in chapter 20. Meanwhile, God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com, and our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.